Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you, Dave Solomon. Oh my gosh, it feels like it's been a while since I heard Dave. honest to gosh, last week was such a trip on Hybrid Jazz. We had the show on Tuesday, but a minimalist show. There was some technical difficulties. Chuck Loeb was wonderful. The whole interview went intact, but we had to close out soon after that. And then it was Thanksgiving, and I hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. And now that the holiday season is upon us, we have your first gift of the season. Yay! We have this gentleman on the line here who we've been trying to get together for a while, and honestly, I did not know all that had gone into the career of this gentleman. I was astounded that after I had met him going back maybe about a year or so ago at Burke's Jazz in Reading, PA, I thought I'll do a little research. Well, I didn't do as much research as I wanted, and then I delved into it. This man is not only a multi-instrumentalist, with saxophone being his primary instrument, but he has toured with everybody and his mama, shared the stage with more, has been a studio musician that has been sought after so long, and then has done jingles for very, very familiar products that you have known through the years. He's just freaking me out. And then he sent me some songs, and I went, wait a minute. This is a whole new ball game with this wonderful gentleman named Dan Cipriano, and it is my pleasure to introduce to you, in case you have not necessarily heard the name, you have most assuredly heard his music, and you'll hear why. Dan, it's good to have you with us.
Oh, well, thank you. Trish, how are you today?
I am much better than I'm talking to you. People have been really anticipating you on this show, I want you to know.
Oh, that's good to hear. I'm really, really thrilled that you invited me on your show. I'm really happy to be here.
I am too, and you've been so busy. Gosh, you have such a love fest going on. You've been with Gloria Gaynor and my friend Tracy Hamlin, and they both think the world of you.
Oh, you know, they speak very highly of you too. We've had a couple bus rides to and from the airport going to our shows, and your name has come up many times.
That is funny. Thank God they can't say anything really bad, because I've only shown my good side to them. And you are so funny. What, I mean, I don't even know where to begin about what you've done lately, and I want to get into the very beginning of you getting involved in music, but you've done a lot lately. We had to find a hole in the day for you to do this, correct?
Oh, I don't know. I'm actually in a parking lot in front of a Starbucks. I have a session in a little while, so I just came out here early and had to do the interview for my cell phone, and then I'm going to grab a little bite to eat and then go record a little bit today. But yeah, we had to find a little window, but it was no problem. And I'm just thrilled that we were able to.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that we were able to do this too, and I figured that you would find that hole. It doesn't surprise me that you're in your car waiting to go to a next recording session. how did this whole journey start for you? Because I didn't know that you played so many instruments, but then you decided on saxophone. When did that interest first start for you?
When I was really young, we had kind of like a little organ in the house, and I just started like tinkering around on that and figuring out songs and kind of teaching myself. So I just kind of like knew I liked it, you know, but it was like in in middle school, you know, when they do the instrument demonstrations at school, you know, to get in the band, I saw one of those, and I kind of knew I wanted to do that. That looked like a lot of, like, something I'd be interested in, so I did, and I ended up on the saxophone for that, and it was just like, it was just one of those things. It was like I kind of at a young age, like, didn't know, like a lot of people, like what I wanted, what I liked, what I didn't like. But like, I knew as soon as I started playing that I liked that, and it was like I was just so drawn to it. I was like 11, I think, when I started, and when I was 12, I decided what I was going to do for a living, and I knew I was going to be a musician, and I just went for it, you know, and it worked out okay.
Yeah.
You know, I just knew that was it for me, and I anything else, you know, being a fireman or an astronaut, I put all that stuff aside, and you know, I'm still a kid doing it, you know. I'm a little older now, but I love it. It's absolutely it's a delightful way to make a living. It really is. People show their appreciation to you all the time, and you get to tour, you get to, you know, make some records, and, you know, maybe do a movie here and there, and it's nice, you know. It's just in terms of enjoying what you do, you spend so much time working, you know, no matter what you do, if you enjoy it, then, you know, you're ahead of the game, and I've been very, very lucky to had such a nice career, and it just worked out very well for me.
Gosh, Dan, you are, and it sounds so humble what you've just said. In looking at all of these credits, I guess that's the bottom line. People need to know that somebody is having fun with an instrument. You and I have known musicians through the years who are extremely good, more than proficient, but they don't have a good time. They don't allow their child to just take over and come out and have a ball on stage. And I think that's what people find in you that makes them gravitate to you, because I got to tell folks, I mean, Sting, Bruce Springsteen, David Sanborn, Bonnie Raitt, Wilson freaking Pickett, everybody in rock, people in jazz, classical folks, pop music, all across the board, rhythm and blues. You've been with a whole lot of people and actually have been in movies. Pollywood, directed by Barry Levinson with Sting, and then we're going to hear a track you played with Wilson Pickett in this track that we're going to hear this hour. Is that what it is? Is that why people have come to you through the years and have said, look, I really want your energy in this? What have they told you, Dan, through the years about why you?
For the beginning parts, I actually, just to give you a little background, I was in the Army band up until,
yep,
from 18 till I was 21, which really got me to help hone my skills performing. We used to do like 300 gigs a year with the Army band, and I was kind of like the featured player in the rock and jazz bands. So I really got to like get a feel for the stage and audiences. And 2 weeks after I got out of that, I auditioned for a rhythm and blues band that was on the road 250 nights a year. And I got that gig 2 weeks out, and I toured with them for 4 years. So I got a lot of experience early on that perhaps others might not have gotten, or you might not have gotten it had you gone to music school. I never went to music school. I just started, you know, just doing gigs and touring and stuff.
Gotcha.
So I think that I was kind of a kid in a candy store, and I loved going to work so much, and I loved playing, and I was very excited to be doing it, and I think people did feed off the excitement that I had for it, and I did that for a very long time, like well over 10 years touring after the Army, and then I moved to New York, and I was getting gigs for that reason for a long time, but until I got the Wilson Pickett gig, which I got that in, I think, 99. Yeah, I got that in 99. Then getting away from, like, people hiring me because they saw me and enjoyed my my energy, I started getting work just because I was associated with Wilson, because people knew me as, like, oh, he's, you know, he's Wilson's sax player. So I just started getting hired just on the name, just because I was associated with him, you know?
Huh, wow.
So those were kind of like the two things that made my career early on and later. And then from that, you just end up meeting so many people, and, you know, being on tour, being in Europe all the time, and, you know, wherever else we went everywhere. You just started networking a lot, and it just kind of blossomed into, you know, whatever it has become, you know, and it's worked out good. It's hard to put my finger on all the different reasons that someone would hire me. You know, I guess people have different reasons, because you wear so many hats, or at least I have, because I do play a number of instruments, and I do different styles, and, like, I read music pretty well, and I often will get hired just to, like, play Barry Sack, and not even take any solos, just be in a horn section and go in, sight read a show on Barry Sack or tenor or alto or whatever it is, you know what I mean? So in those cases, you're not necessarily getting hired because of the, you know, because you're an exciting player. You're getting hired because of a skill set that you might bring to the gig, you know. And then there's other gigs that, you know, where you just go out front and you have the wireless mic and you're out front with, you know, whoever, and you're just rocking and rolling and blowing your face off and entertaining the audience. And then, yeah, those maybe you get called because people know that you can wear that hat as well, you know?
Yeah, and it must be said, because I've mentioned this in the teaser as far as you being on the show today, it's really amazing because you play every kind of saxophone, and then you also play flute, alto flute, piccolo, clarinet, alto clarinet, bass clarinet, and keyboard. So if you get all of that information and combine it with the fact that you're a quick study, you can pick up things just like that, it's just no wonder that you have had this length and breadth of work. It's just amazing. And then on top of that, what really tickled me, because, you know, I'm a Motown girl from way back, you played with Martha Reeves and the Vandellas, for goodness sake.
Oh, yeah, I've done a lot of gigs with Martha. I've done 20, 25 gigs with Martha. It's like kind of like when they're in the area and they need a horn section, I'll get the call and I'll go out and play. I've played every saxophone, whatever she needed at the time, and oh, they're great. That's, you know, that means you forget how many hits that that they had, you know.
Oh yeah,
you know, and they're awesome, you know, and Martha's great, and they've always treated me really well.
I'm glad to hear that, because you know yourself, when you're little or you're impressionable, I should say, maybe like you're 10 or 11 years old, and you hear music that changes your young life, and you know that you'll never forget that music. That was Martha Reeves and the Vandellas for me. So, woo! When I heard that you played with them, had no idea you played that many gigs. What were you listening to when you were coming up, Dan? What really fueled you and set you on fire in your ears?
There were a couple things. I mean, as far as, like, I was really, for some strange reason, into progressive rock. Well, that's true. It was great music. I was, like, a very big Yes and Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Jethro Tull freak when I was in high school.
Oh, wow.
You know, I used to go to all those shows, and I can't even tell you how many Yes and Tull shows I went to. I mean, you know, loved Pink Floyd, that kind of stuff, you know, which was weird because I played the sax. I mean, Pink Floyd used the sax on a few things, you know, but when I got out of the Army, I went out on the road with a rhythm and blues band playing saxophone. And these guys were, like, really into the old-time, old-school blues stuff, you know. And they turned me on to a lot of that. And I had been studying jazz and playing jazz. But once I started, like, really getting exposed to this, it really interested me, especially rhythmically, just the way that the vocalists and the sax players kind of, like, you know, harmonically it wasn't nearly as sophisticated as a lot of the jazz, but I loved rhythmically what was going on with it. And so I became drawn to that and kind of like really dove into that in my early 20s, and that really helped shape my voice as a musician, you know. And to this day, it's now probably my strongest roots that you will hear in my playing, if you ever hear me, is very much just, you know, born from blues, rhythm and blues, and rock and roll now, because I just identified with it at some point and kind of like said, yeah, this is where I want to be and this is where I want to go.
It's really interesting how we see different kinds of musicians and their roots, what interested them, what they were playing as a preliminary, and then how the journey progressed. For instance, today would have been Jimi Hendrix's 70th birthday.
Yes, I saw that. That's really amazing, isn't it?
Isn't that something? And, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily know this or haven't thought about it, but Jimmy, back in the 60s, when Are You Experienced came out, Third Stone from the Sun was like one of the earliest fusion pieces.
Wow.
Yeah, so a lot of cats who are your age and were into rock, and I'm a certain age, and I understand this, we were so totally involved in that rock scene. But then later, as we got older, jazz rekindled something in us, and to hear that kind of meshing of these two genres, like one of the best people I know of, and you probably know, Brian Auger and the Trinity back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of putting together of the Hammond B3 organ and getting the guitars together and fusing the jazz and rock, oh my God, when that's done right, it's a high, isn't it, Dan?
Oh, it most certainly is. That really is so much like with improvised music, whether it's jazz, smooth jazz, rhythm and blues, whatever it is. It's just like taking the roots of one music or one musician's background and sticking him in with a couple other guys who have different roots, and just watching the way, you know, just watching how the music comes out. It's such a beautiful art, because it's like where most art is done by one person painting a picture or whatever, the fact that that music and improvised music is a collaboration of a number of people, and it can never be duplicated like that moment in time again or with another set of musicians. It's such a unique form, art form, that it has a beauty all its own.
Yeah, you're right. And who is it these days that really captures your ear, apart from the fact that you have worked and still continue to work with everybody and his mama? what is it that really piques your interest? Is anybody really grabbing you these days as far as listening and appreciating?
You know, I'll tell you what, I've gotten into, and it's, and I'm not saying that there's anything bad about newer artists or anything when I say this, but I'm very much drawn to vocalists, and not even like the vocalists or the lyrics and stuff. It's just like I still identify more with your older school, like rhythm and blues vocalists, and kind of actually mimic my saxophone style to a lot of that. I was very much, and still am, when I put on something to listen, I'll listen to Ray Charles or I'll listen to Aretha Franklin, and actually focus in on the vocals and the phrasing and the rhythm that's coming out of them. And that has shaped me and still continues to shape me as a musician more than anything. And like I said, it's nothing against like the modern saxophone players or modern vocalists. It's just that those are, to me, and Wilson Pickett too. I mean, touring with him for years, I learned so much from him rhythmically just standing next to him on stage. It used to blow me away to, like, just stand there and go, you know, I was getting a saxophone lesson from listening to Wilson Pickett every single gig, you know, and it was awesome. It was like, you can't buy that. There's no amount of money that can get you that, you know what I mean? I was so fortunate to get it from him and being able to, like, key in, you know, musically on, like, Ray Charles. And we toured with Ray Charles for a few weeks, too. So every night I got to hear him and really keyed in on him. So, you know, that's kind of, like, the direction that I've been and kind of, like, molded that into my saxophone style.
Wow, that's so interesting because Billie Holiday said at one point that the reason that she sounded the way she did was because she took her inspiration from what she heard instrumentally, and that translated into what she did vocally, and you've just said the opposite. That is so cool. Wow.
Yeah, it's worked for me. It's like saxophone is a very vocal instrument, you know, and so there were to me, the two were just, I mean, they were very, very similar. And it just seemed, you know what it was? I found that sometimes some saxophonists played too many notes for me to, like, learn stylistically what I wanted. Though sometimes I play too many notes, too. I'm not saying that, you know, like, you know, I'm Mr. Space because I'm not. But when I would listen to a really, you know, if you would listen to Aretha's thing, for example, I'm at a loss for the song I'm thinking, but you know, you listen to her sing anything, and you just listen to the approach and where she's placing her notes, and you know, rhythmically speaking, you know, and that was what I learned from, you know, and then you add all your notes and your technique and all the classical stuff that you've worked on that's giving you, you know, whatever technique later, but having that basis of rhythm and blues in your playing or in my playing, really, I think it really helps solidify my style, you know, whatever it is now, you know.
It's funny that you should mention Aretha. I was trying to show my son just last night what she did at the Grammys a few years ago. This is going back a little while now. She had filled in for Luciano Pavarotti.
Oh, that was awesome, wasn't it?
Wasn't that crazy?
It was like in the last, it was like the last minute. It's like, oh yeah, he's not feeling too good. Can you cover? And she just walked in and just smoked it without even a rehearsal. It's incredible what she did.
And she made opera look effortless. And
yeah.
It's the way her phrasing was, and Sting, oh my God, Sting was like putting his hands together as if he was praying that everything would be okay. but it was just so doggone cool, the way that some people, oh my gosh, it's the best thing in the world, Dan, when an artist knows what their gift is. There's no panic whatsoever. You can't see it anyway. And they just let it flow as if it was just an organic thing that was supposed to be transmitted from heaven to their voice or through their hands, and it just comes out the way it's supposed to come out. Oh, it was just crazy. And now that you've explained it, I know what you mean when you say that.
Oh, well, that's cool. That's really great.
How can play the saxophone because of hearing the way people sing.
Yeah, for me it works. I don't know that works for everyone, but it definitely was where actually I got most of my the rudiments of actually rhythm and blues playing was off of vocals, yeah.
That's something. And you mentioned Wilson Pickett, so you know I'm going to play this, right?
the movie cut? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah. And this is so wild. This is from the Miramax film, Only the Strong Survive. How did that come to be?
I had gotten the gig in 1999, and Wilson had just gotten a new record out, and that year, and so there was kind of like people were interested in him for a couple things. So we did a really long tour in Europe and a bunch of dates in the States and stuff, just promoting the record. And then we did Letterman actually the night before this, before the movie shoot. And then Penny Bakers, who do all the music documentary stuff, approached him and wanted to do a movie, this movie, Only the Strong Survive, and have Wilson in it. There's a number of other artists in it, Mary Wilson in it, Isaac Hayes, a bunch of people. It's a really good film if you're into like the soul stuff, and it's a great documentary. But,
absolutely.
We ended up filming it at, where do we play? Irving Plaza in Manhattan. And, you know, they had all the crews and everything. And then they just shot a live gig with us. They did some interview with Wilson. And they interviewed a couple guys in the band. I wasn't one of the guys that was interviewed, but they interviewed a couple others. And so when the movie came out, it was actually kind of cool. Because the movie came out, I didn't know if anything I had played had made it in the movie. No one contacted me. I mean, I got paid for it and signed in my release and, you know, my release and all that stuff. But the movie was debuted in New York at the AMC on 42nd Street, right in Times Square. And so I just went down and bought a ticket myself, you know, and I walked in, and I honestly did not expect to even see me on the thing. I figured they'd, you know, do a clip of Wilson saying it'll be it. And I ended up with a feature in the movie, you know, and I was sitting there. And then all of a sudden, there was a 15-foot Dan Cipriano standing in front of me on stage, and I just about peed myself. You know, it was like, oh, I guess I made it in. And so, it worked out awesome. You know, it was like, and I was like, I was so scared. The first time in my life I was ever scared about anything with music, but I was just completely surreal, and I was completely freaked out about it. You know, and when it was over, I'm like, I didn't even know if I played good or not. It was just like this the most, you know, the most frightening moment of my life, you know. It was cool, you know. And then there's a shot of me from the movie with Wilson, and all the after the movie debuted, they used for the promo for the movie, they used a shot of me and Wilson for the promo for the movie. So I ended up in Rolling Stone and Entertainment Weekly and every like music magazine in the world that they were promoting this thing, and I ended up in it. So it was cool, you know. I kind of got lucky on that one, whatever. But it was a very cool thing. I'm happy that I was able to do it, and just like the stars kind of aligned for me that day, I guess. So it was cool.
Well, you know what, Dan? Coming from a female perspective, and I know that Cindy will appreciate this, and she'll be laughing about this. But look, you are not ugly, okay? So of course, they are gonna put hot Wilson Pickett with this hot guy on sax next to him. Of course, that would be a no-brainer in the way of promotion.
Oh my goodness, you're way too kind, Trish. You need to get your eyes checked.
No, look, there is something about you. I mean, you know, one-to-one, you are the coolest guy. But when you're on stage doing your thing, because I saw that clip, and I went, look at him. He just can't. You just come alive.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really sweet. I appreciate it.
Well, let's hear this thing. It's just about 2 minutes. It's not long at all, but this is going to give you a taste of our guest, Dan Cipriano, here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. This is with Wilson Pickett from Only the Strong Survive, the movie.
Yeah. Can I do the cornbread?
Is James Brown doing it?
No.
Not like you?
No. James Brown's playing mostly from here. I'm playing from here.
Yeah.
That's
like
a difference. Like my little Lucy.
it goes. Woo! Oh, my gosh. You know what? That's like a 2-minute vitamin pill. You play that every day, and you're good to go in the morning.
You know, get to go. Those blood curdling screams he does at the end. I used to just wait. I mean, be on stage waiting for those coming up. I don't know how he did that without having laryngitis, because he just ripped those things out at any given time. It was incredible.
And then you know what? You matched it when you blew that sax. Oh my God, that was so trippy. I miss him so much, and if I say that, I know you do.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
Well, he is so legendary. We hear a lot about Wilson Pickett in Baltimore because Baltimore is such a soul-infused as well as a jazz-infused town. And there are some cats in Baltimore and D.C. who had played with him through the years. And as a matter of fact, Dan, you should know that one of Wilson's daughters, Vita, and I are friends on Facebook.
Oh, no kidding.
Yep, so from time to time, if I post anything about Wilson, she knows it. She's a very spiritual lady, and she just has such fond memories of her dad. Oh, my God. It's just really cool that you spent so much quality time with him. How was that on a day-to-day?
It was incredible. You know what was interesting about him? He's a very funny man, but I think I learned so much from him musically, and the funny thing was is he was just one of those people who was so gifted, it really truly was effortless for him, and I talked about this in another interview I did recently. One of the things that was remarkable was he didn't. No, I don't want to say he didn't know what he was doing, like he was, you know, he was clueless. It was so natural for him. He didn't have to think about anything. And when I would actually, like, you know, because we had time in the airports or, you know, or backstage after sound check, whatever it was, you know, I would rap to him sometimes. And I would ask him, like, about the gig the night before or whatever, how he sang a certain phrase, where the way he laid back on rhythmically on the melody. And he would just look at me and he'd be like almost be cross-eyed because he wouldn't even know what I was talking about because there was no thought went into it. It was just pure emotion and pure talent just oozing from that man. And it was like he would sing it was gone, and he never gave it a second thought. And
see?
it was remarkable. He was
yep.
really a remarkable musician, yeah.
Just what I was saying before, I mean, when you think about the greats in the business, the people who have become household names, there's a reason why those folks have become so. When you have the magnitude of that gift, there's no thought about it. It just comes out. It pours out of you. It's like gold.
Yeah.
And
yeah, absolutely. And he was that. It was that. I mean, that was his whole musically. That was it. It was completely effortless for him, and I really admired him as a musician. You know, and as a person too. He was really a great guy.
Well, let me tell you something, Dan. You really, he was wonderful. But in that particular clip, what would that piece have been without you? You're an integral part of so much of the finished, amazing product of so many people who have come and actually gone through the years. And here you are with all of these stories. Would you think of ever writing a book about all of this?
Oh, you know, I never had thought about that or really would think anyone would care. But
oh, my God.
It's something to think about, I guess, but no, I never even considered that at all now.
You would have, it would turn into a movie, honestly, because you've just done the kinds of things that nobody else has done just because of the enormous roster of all the people that you've worked with. I want to ask you about Dick Clark. How did you get to meet Dick Clark or work with him?
I worked with him a few times, and first time was in Cancun back in, I'm going to say like 97, 98, I think 1997. I was touring with Gary U.S. Bonds. I actually played, when I first started with Gary, I played keyboards with him. I played a little sax. He had a sax player that did the gig, so I was just playing organ with him at the time. And so we were down there doing some show, and Dick was, well, I guess it was a Dick, might have been a Dick Clark production, or he was involved in it. So he came out, and we actually played Dick on and off the stage with his Van Sant Boogie. That was the theme from his show. And then he was up there, and he did this whole spiel about rock and roll. It was very interesting. He was a very, very bright man, and really knew rock and roll, obviously knew rock and roll. And so that was it. We just stood on stage and listened to him talk, and I think we might have played some bumpers of whatever he was talking about along the way. And it was just interesting. And then I did a couple shows in New York with him, same kind of thing, you know. It wasn't like he was singing and we were backing him up, but we were just part of, you know, Gary's band would back him up and do the shows. And Gary would come out and sing, and him and Dick would do a little talking together. It was that kind of thing. It was cool. It was very, very, he seemed like a very nice man. I didn't get to know him really well at all, but he seemed very nice.
Well, look, memories of Gary U.S. Bonds, you just don't know, because I'm originally from Philly, so we had Dick Clark first in Philadelphia. So,
yeah, right.
Oh, my God. I mean, the kind of folks that pass through Philly to be on the American Bandstand show then are the folks that you have known through the years to tour with. It's just really amazing. What would you like to do as far as if you had a dream or something maybe to happen in 2013, what would you like to have happen to Dan Cipriano that would be amazing, that would have just to do with you and you being the catalyst as opposed to you playing with anybody else?
You know, I it's hard for me to answer. I've spent my entire career as a sideman, and I've loved being a sideman. And my lovely fiance is kicking me in the butt over and over to get me to go out and do my own record and get a solo career going. So I am heading in that direction. It's just funny because I've never thought of myself, and I know, I mean, I certainly know like I'm capable of doing it and stuff, but I've had such a great career as a sideman and just always kind of marketed myself towards that. So I guess now just getting the doing some more writing and getting a record out and just seeing what happens with that would be wonderful. I've had a little bit of label interest recently, so it looks like, you know, things in that direction will end up probably happening at some point in the near future. But like I said, it's hard for me to think in those terms right now. You know, one of the best things that I enjoy most is touring with Cindy. And if your listeners don't know, I'm engaged to Cindy Bradley, the great trumpet player.
I was going to let you say that because I didn't want to, you know, I wanted you to say Cindy Bradley's whole name. I alluded to Cindy. I'm glad you said so.
Okay. touring with her is the thing I enjoy most. Just to be flat out honest, I love the music. I love the space she gives me. She always has a great band and features me a lot, which is nice. Because I just get to like express myself musically with her more than any other gig I've ever had, which is wonderful. But you know,
wow,
being on tour with the woman you love too is very special, you know. And from the moment that we get to the airport to the moment we get back, it's truly awesome, and it's just musically it's incredible. It's the most fun I've had. So that is the thing I enjoy most at the moment. But as far as what's in store for me as a musician, I guess whatever happens in the solo career thing, and I'm sure we'll see, you know, fairly soon about all of that. And it's wonderful, you know. If you get a chance, you know, if your listeners, hopefully your listeners are probably, a lot of them are familiar with Cindy, you should really check out her last record. It's a Unscripted. It's a great record. It's on.
Oh, my God, yes.
Yeah, it's on Trippin' in Rhythm. Les Cutmore and Jeff Lunt over there, they're great guys. And they had Michael Browning produce it for them. They did an absolutely astounding job putting out that record.
Listen
so,
to you. Oh, you are such a good fiancé. Are you kidding me? Look, I already have it planned that we're going to play another track before you leave me today. But in the third hour of the show, I'm going to play a track from you and Cindy back to back.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, listen, Unscripted is just so amazing. And I have told Cindy this, and by the way, she and I have corresponded about you, too. Shh.
Oh, no.
Yes.
I'm in big trouble now.
No, you're not. Oh, no, it's good. It's all good. But Cindy has turned out such magnificent music, and she is a whole lot more than meets the eye. She was immersed in music when she was little, just like you took to it, and that's probably the reason why, because I know that you guys are like little kids together, but she is so passionate about playing and has such a good time, but she is so well-rounded as you are in your instrumentation. Cindy could play anything, so could you. I mean, I would imagine that when you and she are touring, what you have done so far is breathtaking. But, oh, my God, in the months and years ahead, hopefully, if you are doing your thing together, there's nothing that you two can't do.
It's really incredible. Cindy and I actually, we practice together a lot. We would just like throw on like some background music and Music Minus One, Ebersol kind of stuff, which is just basically like jazz standards with the rhythm section. And we just sit there and we solo and we trade licks back and forth. And that, you know, that's how we'll spend a Friday night, you know.
that's so cool.
It's funny, you know. And you know, I play a bit of trumpet and she plays saxophone. So sometimes we switch instruments, which actually is and if we switch instruments, she always has to like grab the video camera out and make some embarrassing videos of us doing it. It's pretty funny. So we have archived some pretty funny things. It's awesome. It's the only word I can use to describe it. You know, we get to make music together and we're in love and we are we're very much the same person. Just she's, you know, I'm the male version and she's the female version. We have so much in common. I've never met two people who have as much in common as her and I. So it's working out wonderful, and I don't even know who to thank for this, but I think I need to thank someone that she came into my life. That's wonderful.
That is beautiful, and as some of us say in spiritual circles, you are equally yoked. That's for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. I'm going to play another track, but I want you to answer a question for me about some of the jingles that you have done, because people need to know that when they're looking at TV or they've remembered stuff, they go, oh, my God, that was Dan. You did a commercial for Wendy's, the United Way, Pringles potato chips, Goya beans. What?
Yeah, I did. There was more. It was much more of a jingle scene in New York a few years back. The jingle scene is not what it was. So there's not as much in a lot of stuff. The jingles used to employ a lot of musicians and make them a lot of money for a long time. Now the jingle scene is a lot of buyouts, and they also a lot of the companies are getting their music online from libraries, and they're leasing the music. So back then, when I was doing some of the jingles around, you would get called and you would go in and you'd play a 30-second spot you know, and you'd be, it was funny because, like, I mean, if you were to play me these jingles, because I haven't done a national jingle in a little while, but if you were to play me one of the jingles that I did, you know, way back when, I probably wouldn't even recognize that it was me. Because you go in and you're in the studio for, like, I don't know, 3 minutes, you know, and you play your part, you play your little solo, say, yeah, that's it, okay, thanks a lot, they give you a check, you walk out, and then you collect royalties for however, and it is funny, it's like they would take this, like, if you do a 60-second spot, they would chop it up into a 30-second spot also like that, and they might use it in a different market, like in a Spanish market, too, and if it went into that, you'd get paid again. You were getting checks for things you didn't even remember doing, you know?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was cool. It was great. You know, it's too bad that market is so much smaller now than it was. But so much of it, I honestly don't remember because you were literally in the studio for 3 or 4 minutes and you were packing up your horn and you were walking out. And it wasn't this, like, really gratifying, like, musical experience that you'll savor and treasure for the rest of your life. It was, you know, it's just like you were making the donuts. You know, it's the only way I can say it.
Great. You know,
it paid great. You had a lot of fun, you know.
That is too cool. Bless your heart. You're just so you're humble and you have a good time and you get the call and you go and you deliver every single time, and that's what blows me away about you. I've got another track here, Dan, Beneath Sullivan Street, and I want to play it. I'm going to play Young Dan later on during the show. But because that's the longer track, and it's like 6.5 minutes or so. But Beneath Sullivan Street just got me. Explain a little about that before I play it, and then I'm going to let you go.
I did a Broadway show for 2 years. It was the Janis Joplin show. It was called Love, Janis.
Oh, yes.
And it was in, you remember the Village Gate in Manhattan had, you know, all the Coltrane, and all the jazzers played there. This theater was where the Village Gate was, and of course the Village Gate had closed, and it had become this theater, and then in this back room, this very echoey back room, was where the horn players, it was just me and Larry Etkin, where we would go warm up before we had to go on stage, and we had a very long time, this Janis Joplin show. She didn't use horns till the end of her career, so we had a lot of time to hang back there and play. And the sound of the room was gorgeous. I mean, it was just absolutely astounding for a horn player. And so the track you're going to hear, I actually recorded in there. I walked in there, I took a CD burner, and I ran two large diaphragm condenser mics directly into it and just recorded direct. And that's recorded in the room. And the reverb that you're hearing is all the natural reverb in the room. It was a beautiful-sounding room. The Beneath Sullivan Street part was that theater was on the corner of Bleecker Street and Sullivan Street down in the Village, and the actual room that I wrote the song and recorded in was under Beneath Sullivan Street.
Oh, my gosh. That's so cool. Wow. And you certainly are a new, you are fully entrenched in New York City right now, and I'm going to get to this song, but let me ask you, everything was okay with your place in New York?
Yes, I live in Connecticut. I have a house in Connecticut that I live in. So I moved out. I moved out of New York and into the suburbs in 2003. And my house, the town I live in Connecticut, barely got hit. We're very lucky. Cindy's town in Jersey didn't make out so well. So she came up and just she stayed with me the whole time throughout the hurricane and everything. And she
I know that. Yep.
Over a week, yeah. So she just stayed with me the whole time. And so we made out good. I had a friend, a good friend of mine. I just did I just raised some money for him because he lost his entire house and all the contents of it. And all his instruments. Oh, it was awful, you know. But people are helping him out, and he's doing okay. And we're having another fundraiser for him, I believe December 6th at 78 Below in Manhattan. Before I got sidetracked, yes. I made out good, and Cindy's okay, and we're okay, you know, it's a shame that, you know, so many people did have so many problems, and it really changed a lot of people's lives. And it's just
oh, completely. Yeah.
But New York always bounces back.
Oh, for sure. And for some reason, I knew that Cindy had come to stay with you in Connecticut. I thought maybe, for some reason, I thought you had a place also in New York. So I know that Cindy had some challenges, but compared to a lot of other people, not so much because, and please, Dan, let me know what I can do so I can share that information about your friend who lost everything. Make sure that you post that on your page, and I'll be sure to post it on mine.
I will, absolutely. Thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you. Thank you for spending the time. I'm going to play Beneath Sullivan Street, and I know you've got to eat and run to your session. You are so good to have spent this time, and I just think the world of you, and I'm so happy. I know it was God who put you and Cindy together because you radiate such joy, the both of you together, and I really do wish you the world of happiness. I do.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you again at the next Jazz Fest that we run into each other at.
Oh, for sure. It was one of those fortuitous things when we did meet, and the next time it will be deliberate.
Awesome.
Awesome, Dan. Thank you so much. God bless you.
All right. Have a great day, Trish. Thanks so much.
You too, Dan. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Dan Cipriano, and we are going to play Beneath Sullivan Street, featuring Dan on that mighty instrument that he knows so well. Check this out on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Mm-hmm. sounds like New York. Beneath Sullivan Street. Ah, the Village Gate. Man, it would have been just so cool to see Dan Cipriano and Love, Janice. And I was just going back over the research about Dan, and having had recorded dozens of soundtracks for radio and TV shows like The Guiding Light and All My Children and As the World Turns and the jingles, and having been in the movies and on The Late Show with Letterman, The Today Show, just the amazing array of people that he's worked with. And I was so struck because, honest to gosh, this was not planned whatsoever. It just happened to be that Dan had the opportunity to do the show at this particular time and date. And then I had booked Daniel Bennett for the next hour, so Daniel's going to join us momentarily. Who knew that the two Dans we're going to have so much in common? I mean, how many times do you run into such stellar musicians and they play the same instruments? I mean, saxophone would be one thing, and that's what their focus is, but also flute and piccolo and clarinet and bass clarinet. It's just really wild to contemplate that, and I got to figure that there was a reason for that to be happening, and maybe I'll have it explained to me, or maybe Dan and Daniel will meet, and there will be work for the two of them. I don't know. But in any case, I'm just so tickled that Dan Cipriano had the time to spend with us. And now, here is Daniel Bennett. And he's got a very intriguing place where he comes from as far as music is concerned. This is from his album, Peace and Stability, Among Bears. This is called The Lost Treasure of Luta on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. That's like the magical mystery tour for your ears. Oh, I love that. It's ear candy. It's bliss. It's a holiday vibe that stays with you. You'll remember that song for days and days. Oh, my gosh. I can't even tell you how it is that I stumbled across this gentleman, Daniel Bennett. You just heard the Daniel Bennett Group, and he is holding for us. And let me tell you, when I did discover him, I think that I probably had an open mouth for a good hour because I read so much about him. But then I listened and I went, this is just really different. This is really what the Boston Globe actually said, or actually the Boston Herald actually said, is exploratory folk jazz hybrid. Of course, that registered to me because of the name of the show. Composer, bandleader, producer, promoter, and according to All About Jazz, genius. Ladies and gentlemen, Daniel Bennett. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, Trish. How you doing?
I'm great. Music always makes me feel so much better. Thank you.
Yeah, well, it's good to be on your show.
It's good to have you, and I don't even know where to begin to ask you. The track we heard is from Peace and Stability Among Bears, which lends itself to a question, first and foremost, and then the track that we played lends itself to. Who are you, Daniel Bennett? Where did you come from? And thank you for being here. As far as being on the planet is concerned, how did this all start for you?
Oh, wow. Well, the album Peace and Stability Among Bears, people ask me all the time, what's your thing about bears?
Yes.
And I usually try to push it off onto one of my band members and try to get them to explain it, but they all kind of roll their eyes because they always say, oh, Daniel, this is your thing. You got to explain this. We did a trilogy of albums that spanned about 5 years. The first album was called A Nation of Bears, followed by The Legend of Bear Thompson, followed by the third and the final part of the trilogy, which is Peace and Stability Among Bears. And in the process, I teamed up with some really fun illustrators, Pete Lazarski and Timothy Banks, who did the artwork for the albums, and we created sort of a visual cartoon concept that went along with each CD. And it just was a fun kind of side thing that got people interested in the albums. So I kind of have a fascination with bears, and
yes.
The thing kind of just evolved, I guess.
That's really so cool because, you know, Peace and Stability Among Bears is the latest from 2011, and I'm really excited because you've got something else in the works that's going to be out in March, and we'll talk about that. But the whole title now has become more than a title for me in regard to you and in regard to the world. There are changes happening in the world that I feel anyway. So when I see Peace and Stability Among Bears, it's got a very serene effect, even in saying that. So maybe you're just coming from a serene place, and actually your music does that. It just has a way of reaching into somebody and making sure that they never forget the message of that instrumental piece. What led you to this place where you hear so differently? You're very unique.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you, first of all. You know, the guiding thing for me is just having a really fun melody that people can sing along to. I have a good friend whose name is Timothy Dick. He's based in my hometown of Rochester, New York, and he used to tell me, you know, he would never listen to anything, any kind of music, unless it gave him chills. And that was kind of for me because I've been through all sorts of different. I mean, I've been playing music since I was a little kid, and I travel a lot, and I end up playing not just my own music but other people's music. But I do agree with what he says that it's important to write music that universally is enjoyable for everybody. I don't want people to have to try to figure out happening musically. I mean, sure. I mean, if somebody learns something when they listen to it, that's great. But the melody is a god force. And as far as the name Peace and Stability Among Bears, you know, it is peaceful. And it's a little humorous in the same time, but not in a mocking way. I think it's yeah, I don't know. Somebody recently told me it sounded like a children's story or something. And if you look at the artwork in the CD, it's the cover of the CD is two bears, sort of set in the Old West, and you've got the
yes.
sheriff, the bear, who's a big bear. He's a sheriff, and then he's staring down the outlaw who's coming to town. And it's funny, when we first did the artwork for that, my illustrator Banks had this amazing. Ken does work for Cartoon Network, and he's actually recently done the illustrations for Paste Magazine for the last 4 or 5 issues. He's really prolific, and I was happy to have him on the project. But when he gave me the first version of the CD, the bear actually had a big like gun in his holster. Man, I said I totally get it. It's the Wild West, but maybe we can not have the gun, because I don't think, you know, nobody wants to think of bears, you know, killing each other or shooting, harming each other. So there's no bears that were harmed during the making of the CD.
that's great.
But, you know, but no, it's cool. You know, I don't know. It's a fun title. All the titles are sort of unusual. My song titles are kind of unusual. You know, it makes people sometimes laugh. Maybe it just makes them at ease. Don't approach it. I don't try to have a lot of deep meaning all the time, but sometimes it kind of happens intentionally, which I guess is good.
Well, you know, here's why I appreciated you so much. I found you via Facebook, and I found your Daniel Bennett Group page, and I really looked to see where you were coming from, and I saw that you were a very handsome man on your website, which is cool. But you come from a place. And I appreciate this for a very particular reason. My son is 20. He is diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome. He was diagnosed early on. So he changed my world in how I perceive people. When I perceive an adult who still has that child inside of him or her, I am drawn like a moth to a flame. And you have that child inside of you. And it comes out via your music. You take people to a safe place. I don't know if anybody's ever told you that.
You know, not in that way. That's really interesting.
You do. You make people
yeah.
or make this person, and I always learned in radio, if you speak on behalf of you, you're probably speaking for at least 100 other people. But when you are ushered into the world of Daniel Bennett, you are in this world where not a lot of bad stuff can touch you. You're going to be okay for the duration of that.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm glad that's what you do. This is your gift, and you're a busy beaver, too. We just talked to Dan Cipriano. Do you know Dan at all?
Well, you know, it's funny. I caught the end of the interview. First of all, what a great sax player. Really fun to be on the show with him. I know Cindy a little bit, just because we both went to the New England Conservatory way back in the day. So I knew Cindy a little bit at that time. And I think he might be from upstate New York or near Rochester or something. So I think we've got some mutual friends and whatnot. But she's cool. She's a great player. Dan's a great player. So that's cool to hear him a little bit.
Yeah, and I promise you, Daniel, I had no idea that you two had so much in common. The off-Broadway shows that you've dabbled in, Crab House, I want to hear about that. And the multi-instrumentalists that you are, and the same instruments. I was like, what? How did this happen?
Nice. It's a
yeah.
small world, and it's getting smaller and smaller in some ways.
How about that? Do you feel that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's shrinking fast. And, you know, I love it. There's, you know, people talk about how technology has changed a lot of things, and certainly some things have not gone well with technology changing, but there's been some great developments, and people are connecting fast. I mean, just being on a show like yours, you can sort of instantly reach a huge cross current of people, and it's funny, and everybody's listening. I say, oh yeah, I know Cindy, and then like so-and-so listens, and they say, oh, Daniel Bennett, yeah, I knew him at this thing, or maybe I knew Dan Cipriano, or you know, or Tennessee. You know, it's a small world. It's nice.
It is, and sometimes, and I was reminded of this in mentioning this to Dan, because of what happened with the superstorm Sandy. Sometimes it takes something that is extremely serious to be able to pull people together and find out how small of a world it is. Because in the States, at least, we seem to be at our best when things happen for the worst. And it just, as we go now into a holiday season, for some reason, it feels like this is a different kind of season. It feels like there's the potential for unity in people. Maybe I'm just crazy, Daniel, but it feels like a warmer vibe than we've had because stuff has ended. The election is over, and that was a tense-filled scenario leading up to that. Now it's over, and now we can try to relax and enjoy what we have. And what we have in the way of commonality is music. How did it start for you? When did you know that you had something special?
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, my story is probably similar to a lot of other saxophone stories. You know, learned the saxophone when I was in fourth grade. My sister took me to a high school band concert. And it's funny, I recently heard of another sax player who had a similar occurrence when he was like 10 or 11 years old. I went to the high school with my sister and we listened to the high school jazz concert and we heard this guy, Chris Oldfield, play the Pink Panther. And yeah, and it's funny. It's just I'm laughing because I just heard an interview of another sax player who said the same thing. He heard the Pink Panther when he was a little kid.
Wow.
And, yeah, it was awesome. I think at the time I had already started learning the saxophone a little bit, but I didn't understand how you could get such a beautiful sound the way he did. He was a high school kid, and I later got to take some lessons with him, and that was really exciting. But I just remember thinking, wow, how does he get that sound through the horn? And I would go home, and I would play mine. I'm like, no, it doesn't really sound like Chris Oldfield yet. So I was, you know, that's how I learned. And I was in, you know, all the high school, or the junior high, just going all in the high school, marching band, jazz band, concert band, went on, well, anything I could do. And I played in all sorts of extra groups on my own. I was writing music, you know, pretty much from ninth grade on. I taught myself to play guitar. I took saxophone lessons. I just tried to immerse myself in the whole deal. I remember I would carry, you know, five or six instruments to school on a Friday because, like, after school, my friends and I were going to, like, get in the car and drive into the city of Rochester and play a gig. So I
Oh, my gosh!
I'd have my baritone saxophone, a tenor sax, alto sax. You know, I'd have all the horns. I was so excited. That vibe hasn't left me. So it carried on, and I, you know, ended up going to college in Rochester, and then I moved after my undergrad, I moved to Boston to do my master's degree at the New England Conservatory, which is, like I said, where I met Cindy and some other really cool people. You know, like all the other, you know, musicians out there, I just pieced together a lot of different things in my life to try to, like, really ultimately do what I really want to do, and that's just my own music.
And you are doing that. Oh, my gosh. That is so awesome. You know, I get so excited when the show is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy for a reason. It started out to be, I certainly wanted to separate myself from what people had thought that I was delving in, which was smooth. Oh, no, baby. No, no, no. We wanted to make sure everybody got representation. And it's one thing to classify musicians as either straight ahead or contemporary, but when somebody comes along who is able to pique the interest of somebody who's a snob in regard to the first and a snob in regard to the second, when somebody comes along like you that people across the board can hear and go, hey, now that I like. Whatever that is, whatever combination of factors have led this man to create this kind of music, I like it.
Well, thanks. I mean, it's in some ways it's been a calamity of errors and trial, you know, just trying new things. And but I work hard. I mean, in addition to all the band leading, like you mentioned, I do a lot of theater gigs, doubling, sideman things. There are a lot of things that have gone into this. But, you know, my first love is to get people to smile, to laugh, to just enjoy listening to music. I don't want people to try to figure out the music in any way. I don't want people to feel threatened by it or anything. I don't know. It's just me. I think the first few albums I put out were a little more self-aware, but hopefully that's going away. We'll see.
That's interesting that you would say that. Would you say that because you were trying to figure out where you were or which path you wanted to go?
You know, I think I even as a kid, I knew where I wanted to go. I think, like most people, I was, you know, nobody wants to get their head snapped off by outside forces in the music world, and academia can stifle a lot of creativity. So I got a little safe, especially when I was in college and at the conservatory. I played it safe. I was a very busy student just trying to pay dues as a student, but I stifled a lot of the honesty that was kind of in me from the beginning. And now that I'm, you know, really doing this full time, I'm much more at ease with, you know, this is me, you know, call it what you will. People have called it folk jazz. You know, people have called it like avant folk or avant-garde folk jazz. I don't know what it is, to be honest. I think it's changed a lot. I hope it's just enjoyable to listen to more than anything. I hope it's entertaining too. You know?
And I will say healing. That's what I'll say. Because when you hear the authenticity of your work, because now that I know you, you're going to really stand out in my mind, even though there are hundreds of other people, lots of people who have been on the show, lots of people involved in jazz, but nobody sounds like Daniel Bennett, and nobody will.
Oh, I appreciate that. I hope, you know, I'm certainly not the only person out there, you know, trying to do it their own way, but I mean, I appreciate that. That means a lot.
Oh, for sure. And you know, we've talked about this on the show. It has to be a situation that proceeds from you effortlessly. And when you see somebody do that on stage, and then be able to translate that so that you can have that when you come home and hear what you saw on stage and go, oh my gosh, this is really my refuge now in my life. This is why music was created, to have that oasis that you carry with you. And you've really, I mean, not to blow you up too much, Daniel, but you've really done that for me in the past few weeks. They've been extremely stressful, and you've really helped a lot.
Oh, I'd love to hear that. That's an admission accomplished.
Yes, how about that?
That's it. You know, that's the only. Yeah, good. I'm really happy. That means a lot.
I'm tickled, and I got a bunch more questions for you. I'm so excited about the new CD coming out, but let's go back to Peace and Stability Among Bears. What did you feel when the CD was launched? Were you happy? Did you feel like, okay, this is really reflective of me now. I'm really on my journey now. I'm on my way.
Mm.
Did you feel that way?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great question. The CD was, I didn't expect it to be as, to get the reception that we did. We ended up getting on some really nice, you know, sort of best of lists for 2011. And, you know, I know those are kind of arbitrary lists that critics put together, but, you know, critics, it was nice because people were finding the album. All of the music on the album we performed quite a bit, and I can play this music even in like large or small venues. Like, for instance, I travel to Boston. I still go to Boston every Wednesday to play Liberty Hotel in Beacon Hill, and that's a beautiful, gorgeous four diamond hotel, and we get all of our original music in the hotel space, and people love it. So I'm excited that we can still, and we've got gigs here in Manhattan, like that we do residencies where we can just work out all of the original music. So the album's not abrasive that in any way that it would like be tough to play it in one of these venues. So it's been cool. I didn't realize the music would be flexible enough that we could play it in, you know, clubs, hotels, festivals. It's kind of been pretty easy to kind of like sneak it into different audiences.
That's cool. And yeah. Have you had the same I know that you sent me information, and I am so grateful for the information that you sent me and the tracks too, but have you been able to keep some of the musicians that you have known with you and developed, or that has the personnel changed?
I've got a few working bands. The personnel really remarkably has stayed the same in some ways. I've got a band here in New York with Mark Coccio, Peter Brendler, Mark Lau, Brian Adler, Tyson Sibelic, kind of a rotating cast of guys. They're actually going to be on the new album out in 2013. But I've also got a group that's very, very busy and current in Boston, because I'm at the hotel every week with Blake Newman, Chris Hirsch. Chris is on all of the Bear albums. Well, almost all of the Bear albums.
The Bear albums. That's so cute.
Like Bear Trilogy. Bear Thompson Trilogy.
That's so cool.
I always tell people, you know, you really can't hate these albums, because, who hates bears? I mean, come on. You know,
seriously.
At the end of the day, it's just, right, seriously, I mean, what kind of...
You would have to be a pretty cold-hearted person to hate bears.
Exactly.
And speaking of the new album, I was so tickled because you sent a track, and I guess, I don't know, are we going to debut this track?
You know, Trish, I kind of think we should.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, why not? You know, I still have the name of the album. It's going to be out in March of 2013. The name of the album is still kind of under wraps. Yeah, we're excited. We have a featured guest on the album, a poet whose name is Remus Yuzgiris. I love his name, by the way.
I do too. Remus Yuzgiris.
I know, right?
Oof. Yes.
I know, right? So Remus is an old friend of mine. I actually met Remus. My group used to play at a place called Puppets in Brooklyn, and he came up to me at a gig once and very sort of humbly introduced himself as a poet in New York and blah, blah, blah. And I later looked him up and realized that he's a really prolific poet. He's been in the Atlanta Review and the Hudson Review, and he's a Fulbright scholar, and he's, you know, it kind of blew my mind. So anyways, him and I collaborated and did a bunch of gigs together, and we got to feature him. I think he's on the track that I sent you.
Yes. And I'm thinking to myself, whoa, this is like a uptown hip hop or this is.
Yeah, right.
It's so different than what you would hear. You don't expect to hear Remus come through. It's just really so different. And if this is going to be reflective of the album, it's going to be delicious.
I'll tell you, Trish, the funny thing is I don't think Remus has heard himself yet on track, so this will be the first time that he's heard himself. When we did it in the studio, it sounded a lot different than the version that we now have, which is the definitive version. So it's exciting.
Oh, my gosh.
Hopefully
well,
you won't be upset with me for what you do him.
I don't think so, because it just
okay.
is so it, – it's you know, I've lived long enough to remember the word beatniks. That was in the late 50s, early 60s, and it reminded me of that time, like when you walked into a club and people were going, yeah, man, everything is just everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was so cool. So this is whatever it might be.
Exactly.
And we're going to play it from the Daniel Bennett Group right now on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Gets me so juiced up to hear that track. Wow. That's the Daniel Bennett Group, whatever it might be. And Daniel, I have to say, I love the production on this. I really do. When you're hearing, it's Tyson Stubelek on drums, correct?
Right.
And then Mark is at Cochio?
Yeah, Cochio.
On guitar. And then you are on your flute, and then you've got that spurt of poetry that just comes out of the blue. It just blows my mind. Wow.
Oh, cool. It was a fun session. We recorded it at Low Fish Studios in Manhattan, which is a great studio, and our engineer, whose name is MP Kuo, she's a really cool engineer, and she did the whole thing, and we've worked with her a lot. She had a lot of creative say in the whole process of putting it together. And by the way, Peter Brenler, also on bass. Peter's a great bass player here.
Yes. Yeah, it just really fit. I was going to mention about that too, because Peter had a way of riding the waves of that. It was just you didn't know exactly where it was going to go, but that flute, just like the Pied Piper, was leading you somewhere. Whatever it might be. Oh my gosh, are you excited about this new project? I bet you are.
Yeah, we're really excited. I tell you, we've spent over close to 2 years just performing these songs live. We play regularly at a place called Comey Jazz. It's a jazz club in Midtown Manhattan. And that's probably the venue where we worked out these songs probably the most. I'm excited to finally see sort of the fruits of our labor coming out soon.
Man, it's just... I get so excited for artists that, I know a lot of people know about you, but I just discovered you, so I'm like a kid in a candy shop, and delving back into the Bear Trilogy and Live at the Theater with the Charlie Hunter Trio back in 2009, into that and seeing the progression of music and the journey where it's going to go. What excites you about what you hear these days? Are you getting new input for your ears as far as what makes you excited? Is there something happening musically that you're finding in Manhattan? Is there something that's happening when you go to Boston that you hear that it makes you crazy with good feelings?
Oh, I mean, there's so much music happening everywhere. I mean, it kind of blows my mind. I think the truth is there's been, there's cutting-edge music almost in every pocket of the world now, which is great. I think we're all discovering it now through the Internet and through, as we were talking about earlier, the shrinking world that we live in.
Yeah.
I mean, anything with a nice melody, I'm sold. I do a lot of classical gigs whenever I can. I love the music of Steve Reich, Philip Glass, Terry Riley, some of the minimalist composers. I don't know, my list of things that inspire me it's kind of like really long and sort of confusing because it's as long as it's a nice melody, Yeah, there's a lot going on. I mean, I can't even keep track of all the things that are happening, and they're happening everywhere. I've got friends who live in the Midwest, the West Coast, where there's great music happening everywhere. It's a very exciting time.
It is, and it's funny because when I was listening to that track the first time and then listening to it, this is like my third or fourth time to hear whatever it might be from the forthcoming album, I thought to myself, this is interesting, and I wonder if Daniel thinks about this or not, but it's funny how you, the person who is conceiving the music, can think of it one way. And then when it gets to a listener's ear, the listener says something that might surprise you, for example. That sounds kind of tribal to me.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea that it doesn't necessarily sound like something that would come from a person who is based in the United States. It has this global vision to it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to say. It's fun to hear different people. The reactions are always different, I love that. I really stopped trying to maybe explain what it is and maybe just get people to listen and just they can enjoy it kind of on their own terms, which is the best way to do it, you know?
You're an old soul, Daniel. You are. I'm finding that out about you as you're talking. You would probably be in a state of bliss if you were to see some of the music from the soundtracks of the 60s. I grew up in the 60s, and that's what that particular tune reminded me of. Throwback to all those years. You've got a whole lot of stuff churning around inside of you. You do.
Interesting. Yeah.
Do you find yourself
that way?
Yeah. Do you consider yourself to be a serene person? Does the music make you crazy sometimes? Like, oh my gosh, it's spilling out of me. I got to write this down.
Ooh, that's a good question. When the inspiration hits me, it comes out fast. That's a really good question. I think the melodies come out really fast when they're ready to blossom. I write all of my songs from the guitar, actually. I just walk around the house with an acoustic guitar and sing. Yeah, I sing everything. I can't write from the piano. Some folks are really good at that. That's not my thing. It gets too academic or head trippy. There's too many notes or something happening when they're playing. But the guitar, for the guitar, it's like you're strumming a chord and you're singing. And I don't write anything that I can't sing instantly. I mean, when I write a song, 10 minutes after the song is done, I can sing it all day. I don't have to, and it doesn't require, hearing the chord or anything else with it. I can just sing the melody almost instantly. Then I know it might be something nice to hold on to.
That's fascinating. That really is. Because there's so many people who compose songs from the piano and they don't even think twice about that. But to hear you say what you said, and then earlier, there's so many influences and inspirations that come to you. You really are adamant about making sure that all of that filters through you so that you can make it simple.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to write something complicated. I mean, if it might sound complicated at the end when the band's really rocking and there's all sorts of things that we are doing together, but I really hope it doesn't come through as being intentionally complex or something. I don't like that. I actually really don't like that at all. I already play enough complex music with all of my theater gigs and with the doubling things that I do. And I play a lot of contemporary saxophone music, and that's kind of wild and hard and weird. But I don't want my music to sound that way at all. Hopefully it
doesn't. No, it's beautiful in that it's the first phrase that comes to mind is easily digested. And that's part of the safety factor. I mean, brilliant. You can have that. It's like you open the door, and inside that room where you've opened the door is exactly the place you want to be, and you go, oh, thank God. And there is the best chair in there, and you can really find out. You can get back your peace that you've lost. That's what happens with Daniel Bennett music.
Oh, well, thanks. That's great. It's nice to hear that, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And what is it that you would like to do? Do you have dreams that are this close or maybe further away? What would you like to see happen with your music?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, I mean, I think I'm getting closer and closer, for one thing, to just making albums that are, like I mentioned earlier, just kind of an honest music, hopefully, that just sounds like me. I think we're getting closer. So, just to be able to continue to do that. The group's been blessed. I mean, we're very busy. We've got not only some residencies here in New York and in Boston, but we've got other gigs and travels that we do. It's exciting to just get out there and to just play music. Maybe make people smile a little bit. You know, maybe they'll laugh when they just see the album cover or something. These little things like that are really fun. I don't set out to educate people about anything. I really don't. I think that's in some ways a little arrogant when musicians have that posture about their band. Well, this is the band that's going to, you know, we're going to educate the audience and we're going to reshape and rechange and I don't like that. It's divisive. So I don't get into that. And I try to stay away from too much labeling of what my style is or what our influences are. Because you always alienate half your audience because they don't understand that. And then they'll just say, oh, I don't want to hear this. the people that dig what I'm into, they'll jump on board. But the other people are kind of like, well, what about me? And I kind of get that. That's not really fair. So it's much more enjoyable to just say, oh, here it is. Listen to it. If you dig it, great. I mean, we appreciate it. And, we just keep going. It's been a very busy year. Like I said, when I'm not band leading, I also do a lot of theater gigs. I'm very involved with the Secret Theater in Long Island City, Queens, and then various productions here in Manhattan. I go up to Westchester to play at the Sandbox Theater. That's a great professional theater group up there. I do, woodwind doubling. That stuff's great because it gets some of my band leading stress out of me because all I have to do is just play. Whereas when you're band leading and traveling, you're doing so much more than just playing.
Oh, yes, yes. And you're an ace promotion person, too. I was fascinated by that. And now talking to you, you're the perfect person to promote gigs all over the region because you have, without even trying, and this is how the best salespeople are, you have that kind of personality that naturally tends to beckon someone to be interested in a project that you're doing.
Oh, that's cool. That's nice to hear that. That's cool.
Yeah. You do. And here's another thing. If somebody ever tapped you on the shoulder, Daniel, and said, I want you to be involved in a children's project that I'm going to do, because you know what? It's not that I'm a soothsayer or anything like that, but I just had a vision of you getting a Grammy for being involved in a project. You would just be so suited to a multicultural storyline to something that becomes an audio book.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of yeah.
Interesting. Preach it. No, I'm listening. I'm receiving that. That's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
Listen.
I appreciate that.
You're going to be doing film soundtracks. You're going to be doing some TV. You're going to be asked to do a lot because people are really receptive to the authenticity of music now. And actually, this has been a conversation on the show before. There are quite a number of people that are based in L.A. particularly that look for musicians who are not necessarily in the clique of what the union musicians do in Los Angeles. So they want to try to find a different voice to enhance what their storylines are on TV or in film.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the perfect
great.
Person. You're the perfect person for that.
Yeah. I appreciate that. It's, like I said, I think the group is getting closer to being, putting it out there very honestly and not having any, artificial qualities to the music. So hopefully that's going to come through with the new album. I should mention, too, you were mentioning promotion. I run two different concert series, one in New York at the Triad Theater on the Upper West Side. And then one in Boston, which I haven't actually done as much. It's at the Cambridge YMCA Theater, and that's an ongoing concert series that we do. My group curates it. We perform. But we always bring in usually somebody that we know in the area, another group. We've had some interesting groups as a double bill. So the R group, we've had saxophonist James Carter, Bill Frisell, guitarist, Charlie Hunter, who, as you mentioned, one of our albums was taken from one of our shows, a double bill that we did with his band.
That's awesome.
David Fujinski from the Screaming Headless Torsos, Jerry Berganzi, Greg Osby, who's a big hero of mine, great alto saxophone player.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny. It's just that's another hat that I have to wear in order to get our own music out there, is being willing to share. We're always sharing stages with other groups, and I happily do it because it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, and you don't, you know, you don't care. You don't have the ego involved. You're just happy to do that. That's pretty cool. It's again that childlike spirit inside of you, which is going to last. That's why you put out this great music. Woo! It's exciting. Well, is there a street date for the album to drop? I know it's going to be March. Is there a particular date in March in 2013?
We don't have a date yet. It'll be in March sometime. But stay tuned. You know, you can learn about. We'll keep everybody updated at our facebook.com/Daniel Bennett Group BENNETT like Tony Bennett.
Yeah.
Daniel Bennett Group, or you can check out DanielBennettGroup.com. We're always putting up info on that site.
Yes, and thank you for keeping that current, by the way. You not only have the Facebook that is allowing people into your own world on a day-to-day, but you've got that website updated as well. And that's a calling card these days for so many artists. I try to explain to people, look, if you are trying to sell yourself and trying to sell product, you've got to have both going full tilt boogie. Don't you agree, Daniel?
Oh, yeah. I mean, in this day and age, the website is absolutely expected. You got to have that thing totally up and going, and the Facebook and Twitter. We're on Twitter. We're kind of everywhere, and it's a necessary beast to getting out the music.
Because you know what, nobody is handing out business cards so much anymore. They want to go back to the house after they see a gig and go, look, I'll catch you, I'll find you online.
Right. Don't worry about it. I'll find you online. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It's
spend all the money on these business cards. Okay, you can just look us up, I guess. Yeah.
And actually, that's pretty environmentally sound. You know, you're saving paper by not handing out business cards. So that's a cool thing. But you've got to have all of those operating because nobody. I mean, we're living in an ADD world. You've got to reel people in and get them focused on what you do. So you're doing the right thing. Bless your heart. And I have another track to play. Yay! You have a couple more minutes for us?
Of course.
Okay. And we're back to Peace and Stability Among Bears. And this is so cool. This is a double whammy bear thing. Bears in a covered wagon. I love this. What's the imagery when somebody writes a song like this, Mr. Bennett?
Right. Oh, you know what? Just pure fun. Hopefully it's just pure fun. Everybody laughs when they hear the name of this song. Yeah, hopefully they just laugh. I hope they laugh.
Oh, this is, I don't know. You, if you don't feel good by the end of the song, then check your pulse, okay? This is from Peace and Stability Among Bears. Daniel Bennett is my guest right here on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. song is a trip. Woo! Oh, my God. Daniel Bennett is some kind of whirling dervish on that sax. Holy cow. Whatever you were doing, it was like mesmerizing. It's just riveting. You really express yourself in a different kind of way.
Oh, I appreciate that. That was a fun recording. We did that at the 9B Studios right outside of Boston, actually. Shout out to Brian Silver, who produced that album. So that was a fun day.
Oh, my gosh. No doubt. And then right before you came on, we played The Lost Treasure of Lunta. And that's the song that people hear when they go to your website, right?
Yeah. That's a song.
Beautiful.
That's usually the when we perform these tunes live. That's always kind of our closing tune on our shows. It's a fun song.
I didn't get the memo about that, so I'm sorry. I played it first.
No problem.
It's so beautiful. Oh my gosh! Each and every one of these songs is like this journey. There, I didn't think about it before, but I was laughing as talking to the folks in the chat room. It just reminded me of a couple of bears doing a line dance. And
good,
then,
I like that. Go with it.
As if it was something in Chuck E. Cheese, here you come out and you're like wailing on this this alto sax, and the bears are like pausing like, whoa.
Yep.
So great. I'm so glad that you had the time to spend with us, Daniel. I really appreciate your talent.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me on the show, and thank you for all that you're doing for all the musicians. It was really good to be on the show.
Well, we'll have to do it again when the new CD drops. We'll have you back on so you can shout that from the rooftops, and then we can play three more tracks.
Oh, I would love to. I appreciate that. I would love to.
That would be a great something to look forward to, a gift for the new year. And keep me posted. I'll keep going to your page on Facebook, and of course to the Daniel Bennett group on your website there, that you keep updated to find out what's going on. But please feel free to shoot me a message or refresh me as far as the specific date for that album to drop.
Yes, will do.
Thank you. You're going to have a good holiday season. You're going to have a good 2013.
Oh, well, you too. I appreciate that, Trish. That means a lot.
Well, it really means a lot to have found you, Daniel. You're really special. You've got a certain kind of sound that others may try to duplicate, but there's only one Daniel Bennett. And I just saw that... one of my folks that I treasure that comes to the chat room said, wow, just so interesting to immerse herself in this music. So you've given some folks some unforgettable moments here. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Trish.
Thank you, Daniel. You have a wonderful day, and we'll talk again.
Yes, we will.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yes, sir. Daniel Bennett, and I'm really happy that we had the two Dans back-to-back. Just, I don't normally, and here's a confession here, like to do that, to have two artists, especially back-to-back, who play the same instrument, but this was a pretty intriguing exception today, just because of the fact that Dan Cipriano has a totally different style and has been with a totally different crowd as he has made his journey. And then Daniel Bennett comes from a different place entirely. So now there's a new dream for moi, and that is to have a big show where all of the favorites that we have that we heard on Hybrid Jazz all come together under one roof, or maybe an outside festival in the summertime, and play all this music. Different folks who play piano, but different styles. People who play guitar, but different styles in guitar. And then the two Dans. It would be awesome. Woohoo! let us delve into some more music. And you know what I'm going to play right now? Gentlemen, that Mr. Matt Williams and I just saw in the past several days. Albert was playing in Baltimore last week, and Matt and I got a chance to see him, and T got a chance to see him play guitar, too. He was our guest in the past many days, and we didn't get to this song from Albert, ITD, International Travel Diary. This is Love Again. We talked about the song, but we did not play it. So here is Albert on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Woohoo!
The most unexpectedly over-the-top beautiful interviews that I've had this year is with that man, Jonathan Butler. Oh my gosh. And let me just share something with you. You just heard I Stand on Your Word from the album that debuted at number one on the contemporary jazz Billboard chart. Now, this is essentially a gospel album, right? So I'm just tickled about that. It's no surprise whatsoever. Jonathan Butler in the past year or so has taken his faith to a new level and allowed himself to be used in such a way that even he is blindsided in the best way. There was a scenario whereby Jonathan was part of an interview that I was part of, and I this is going back some time now, and I thought, this just doesn't feel right. At the time, maybe he was going through some struggle, maybe I was, whatever the circumstances. So for him, this was going back now in October when he was with me on Hybrid Jazz. Whatever had been blown away, just it went away. And here is this new Jonathan and maybe new Trish. So amazingly humble, grateful, feeling blessed. And is he getting rewarded for it? Because that was something else. To debut on the contemporary Billboard Jazz charts when you have a project that is essentially not jazz, but gospel. But you just have this name that is carved out for you in contemporary jazz corridors, as it were. So he's grateful. So is Mac Avenue, his record label. And he is going to be in our region next couple of days. I'm not even going to say where anymore because I should get paid a commission. But you'll probably hear if you are a Facebook person, because we're trying to work it out so we can go. If I can get my son to go with me, it will be wonderful. Talk about being fed. This is a smaller venue. Jonathan's going to be there for about 4 days. And to see him talk to people and feel that music, it is a whole different world, really. So JonathanButler.com has more information about where you can go to see him. I think he's just taking a breather after this next few days and going to spend time with his family. Woo! He is a trip. Oh, my gosh. Such a pleasure to have spoken with him. And there is somebody at the door, and I'll get that in a minute. Isn't that something? Of course, I can't go to the door when I'm on the air. This is the beauty of doing a show at home. Oh, we heard Albert, and Albert is going to be at Scholars in Boston. That's far away, so I'll mention that. And then he's going to be in Miami, and then he's going to come back to New York to play at the Harlem Hilton in the early part of 2013. So, Albert is one of those people that if you get a chance to see him, please do, because he is staggeringly talented, very, very low-key. And when he comes back to the area, we'll have to have him on the show again. He's just amazing. We had more live listens to Albert than we have had for any guest that has been on the show so far. And that is because the good folks at Blog Talk Radio, maybe this is because of that, have made me a featured show host. So I thank BTR a lot. And I thank Dan Cipriano a lot for being the first guest on the show today. This is Dan, song called Young Dan, I want you to hear on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Now I'll go answer the door.
is trumpeter Cindy Bradley, and you're listening to my friend Trish Hennessy on Hybrid Jazz.
remember to remember. It has been, can be, and still is.
Track, I thought, this good thing I'm by myself, because it would be dangerous if there was a person right here, get a little trouble going on, you know what I mean? The Flowicist, Natalie Stewart and Raheem Devon, with some Smoking Sacks in the middle of that thing. Start Again from The Flowicist Presents Flowetry Rebirth from a couple of weeks ago, November the 12th, that was released. Just real neat. There was a kind of vibe there. Here's Raheem channeling Marvin Gaye there and Natalie doing her thing. This is a particular groove that just seems to work. And, of course, Flowetry is no longer. I think that Natalie is getting her revival gear on to go full tilt boogie and have the kind of situation that Marsha Ambrosius has happened. I'm not sure what's going on, but this album seems to be doing well. Raheem Devon, meanwhile, has got his own radio show going on via Bliss, B-L-I-S, and you can find out more at RaheemDevonMusic.com. They sound sweet together, don't they? And making beautiful music together is Cindy Bradley and Dan Cipriano. Back to back they were. Cindy, yes. Oh, my gosh. That track from Unscripted. Look, any track from Unscripted is going to be good. Truth be told. That was A New Day, and we debuted Cindy's liner. She did a couple of liners for me. I'm so happy. I love that girl so much. Just a consummate performer and a writer and someone who knows her way around the studio because she knows the music so well. I love to hear her do her thing on trumpet, as I love to hear her fiancé, Dan Cipriano, do his thing on saxophone. And what you heard was something called Young Dan to start our set. This is from a jazz group that Dan recorded with a few years ago called Groove Station. Now, if you want to get a hold of that, you just make sure that you write to Dan, care of DanCipriano.com, or go to Facebook and see if you can get a hold of some music that he's done, because, you know, when we first tried to get this interview together, he said, I don't have music ready for you on MP3 yet, but I'm going to try to send some tracks later down the road. So it's just so cool to be able to hear the different sides of Dan, who can do any genre at all. And then to hear the three tracks that we heard today, oh, it's just so nice. And then to hear that track with Wilson Pickett, man, smoking stuff. I'm grateful to Dan that he had the time for us today. Let's get a couple of songs in before the close of the show, shall we? Now, we had, for a short time, Chuck Loeb on with us last week. In the many travels of Chuck Loeb, he was with a group for a short and shining time called Steps Ahead that was founded by Mike Manieri in the early 80s, actually. Maybe even before then, but Mike on a vibraphone was the one who set the wheels in motion. And this is from a 1995 Christmas compilation. This was a particular project that was for the benefit of Special Olympics. And the name of it is Jazz to the World. Many, many folks are on this CD. It's just a wonder to behold, all the great tracks. This is Steps Ahead and their version of Angels We Have Heard on High. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
So you woke up too late, 'cause your heart was so great. You walked right into the trap. That's the lullaby for losers. So you didn't think twice of that fool's paradise until your bridges were burned. Well, now it's time that you learn. That's the lullaby for losers. What did they all say from the very start? It was a quick and easy way to get a broken heart, but you fell for that scheme, had your heart in that dream, and now you're watching it die. So have yourself a good cry. That's the lullaby for losers. Get a broken heart, so your romance fell through, and you're lonesome and blue. Well, baby, you're not alone. Just don't weaken and fall just because you are alone. That's a lullaby for losers.
Like honey and silk. Shoo! Ethel Ennis, happy birthday, Ethel, as you turn 80 tomorrow. Mercy sakes alive, good buddy. Circa 1995, Lullaby for Losers. I could tell you stories about Ethel Ennis. Oh, my gosh, such precious memories through the years. Baltimore's legend, Ethel Ennis, is one of the favorite singers of Frank Sinatra. Had played with folks who just revered her, including Benny Goodman, who personally invited her to sing with his band. Arthur Godfrey loved her, played at Monterey Jazz, played at Newport Jazz Festival, had her own place with her beloved longtime husband Earl for a number of years called Ethel's Place. And she is playing tonight at this beautiful venue in Baltimore. It's 7 o'clock till 11 on De Musique. That's where Albert was last week. It's a birthday party with Whit Williams' big band at 7 o'clock. There's a jam session with Jesse Powers and Spice at 9. There's a number of friends who are going to this event tonight. And if you can go, if you are listening on this particular day, November 27th, make it a point, if you will, to go to celebrate the life and times of Miss Ethel Ennis. You will be glad you did. Your ears will thank you. She's going to sing, yeah. Happy thank you to Matt, who posted something on my page. I'm just so grateful for this, because this is going back in time again to when Ethel was doing her thing with Benny Goodman and his orchestra. This is 1958, so thank you, Matt, for that. Can't wait to hear that later on. We heard from Jace Miller. Now, I called him Jace before, and he never corrected me. I'm calling him Jace now because Beej, our bride in the chat room, says that's the way to pronounce his name. That is a brand-new single, Isola di Chill, with Rocco Ventrella from Italy on soprano sax, Isha Love on piano, Rhodes, Derek Murdoch on bass, Ricky Lawson on drums, Nate Harrison, who's got a hand in doing that thing with all the production abilities he has. Jace is originally from Virginia, now makes his way in San Diego. Love that song so much. Woo! Isola di Chill. You'll be hearing that again. And we heard, too, Steps Ahead. And if I sound to be rushing just a little bit, I'm not really, but I am, because I want to play a special song. Steps Ahead. Mike Manieri on vibraphone. By the way, Mike and one of the original guys in Steps Ahead, Michael Brecker, God rest his soul, were on Brothers in Arms from Dire Straits. Just a little aside. What you heard, Angels We Have Heard on High, from a special Olympics benefit package that was called Jazz to the World. Oh, my God, some stellar people on it. If you have a chance, get it, please. Let us please remind you that today is the day that Jimi Hendrix would have turned 70, all right? If you think I'm going to not close out the show with Jimi Hendrix and his experience, Third Stone from the Sun, you would be sadly mistaken. If we have time to say goodbye after this particular song ends, wonderful. If not, I'll see you on Thursday, hopefully, with Claire Daly, ladies and gentlemen. 1967 was the year for this. This was all about Planet Earth, inspired by Star Trek. And Chas Chandler and Jimmy got together and did this, along with The Experience, on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.